This month's podcast features Mosik Hakobian, the executive director of Higher Ground, a JFY Networks partner. Higher Ground was founded in 2010 by longtime Boston civic leader and social activist Hubie Jones to address the reasons for historical lack of improvement in health and educational outcomes for children and families in Boston's low-income neighborhoods, despite a wealth of resources available in the city. The nonprofit organization is a catalyst for collective action that works with residents and partners to achieve higher outcomes in education and to promote the health and well-being of children and families in Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan. It envisions a city where residents of all neighborhoods enjoy the benefits of a thriving city equitably. Higher Ground supports organizations that address and work to solve problems in these communities. It offers families support to prepare their children for school while supporting the schools so that they have the resources to educate at the highest level. In a well-deserved gesture of recognition, Thompson Island Outward Bound is honoring Mosik at the Evening Expedition Gala on Wednesday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. They are presenting him with the North Star Award for his lifetime of service to Boston and his unparalleled ability to bring communities together. In this episode, you'll hear how Mosik initially became involved with Boston's Higher Ground.
So Hubie Jones, who founded Higher Ground, and I had served on the board of the Boston Housing Partnership for a number of years. And in fact, before that, I used to watch Hubie on television. There was a program called 5 on 5. And he was my favorite commentator, sort of on the left, on the progressive side. And I believe, I think his name was Avi Davis, if I'm remembering this correctly. He was sort of the conservative voice, and the two of them would go at it. So I used to watch that. And then when I met him on the Boston Housing Partnership board, I was really impressed that somebody that I used to watch on television and hang on every word of his. We were now serving on a board together. So we got to be good friends and colleagues.
His thoughts on how to provide assistance to homeless families using a holistic approach.
Once the families are housed, then the question is, how do you support them? What are the needs? What are the service needs do they have? So part of the stabilization process for a year or more after they're housed is just making sure they have all the services they need, all the access that they need.
And how collaborating with multiple agencies is the best approach to support those in the community with the greatest needs.
It is clear to me that by working together, a coalition of now 7 organizations in one case and 20 partners in another case, including schools, can more effectively deliver more services and more benefits to the families we're trying to reach.
This podcast was created by JFY Networks, a Boston-based nonprofit provider of online learning programs to schools, students, and parents. JFY's individualized self-paced curricula help raise individual and school performance measures by maintaining and achieving grade-level skills. JFY provides online ELA and math curricula aligned to state and college standards from grade 5 through high school, with personal support, on-site, online, or via telephone, from friendly learning specialists like yours truly. JFY supports all educational communities and provides free scholastic resources on our website at jfynet.org. For JFY Networks, I'm Greg Cunningham. Boston is a city with immense and growing resources. But distributing those resources so that all Bostonians share in them equitably has long been a challenge. Higher Ground works with government, schools, the business community, and nonprofit community organizations to devise strategies for more equitable sharing. JFY's executive director, Gary Kaplan, recently sat down for a conversation with Mosik Hakobian, the executive director of Higher Ground. The two executive directors have worked together on many projects for more than 2 decades.
Mosik, it's a great pleasure and actually a privilege to have the opportunity to do this interview with you. You and I have known each other for, I don't know how long, 20 years, 25 years, done a number of things together around town. And now we're involved in this neighborhood collaboration in Roxbury, which is of great interest, which we're going to get into in detail. But just before we get to the subject of the Surround Care Coalition and Higher Ground, just give us a little bit of context. Just where were you born and how did you get to the U.S. and how did you get to Boston?
So thank you, Gary. It's nice to see you again. And you're right. We have a long history together. And it's always interesting to reflect on how we got here. So I was born in Tehran, Iran, into an Armenian family. So we were part of the minority in that country. At the time, my parents felt like Iran was not necessarily the best place for our family to stay. Somehow, she might have been, she might have anticipated what was going to happen over time. But because my mother was technically born in Russia, we benefited from the quota system that the U.S. had at the time. And we were able to, they registered to come to the U.S. in 1951. And within 5 or 6 years, our turn came up and we immigrated to the United States. Had she been born in Iran, the quota system would have required about a 25-year wait, and chances are we would have never been here. So the whole issue of my mother's birth is another interesting story that we don't have time for. But anyway, so we moved here in 1958. I was in the seventh grade. We moved to New York. My parents both knew English. They'd worked for American and British companies. So my mother had a job when we came to New York. My father found a job pretty quickly. My sister and I enrolled in schools in Queens. I went to Brooklyn Tech High School, then Columbia College, Columbia Architecture School. The architecture school is what sort of landed me in Boston. In the junior, I was at Columbia when there was a big strike in 1968, and the architecture school was one of the five buildings that were occupied. I was part of the student group that occupied the architecture school. And we were concerned and were protesting Columbia's plan to build a gym on a park that faced Harlem. And we felt like this elite institution was taking public land away and we weren't going to stand for it. But that experience resulted in us designing a curriculum for our junior year. I was part of a team that worked in East Harlem designing best pocket playgrounds, which were never built. And I learned a lot about how not to do community work in East Harlem. But it was a typical case of us getting our credits and leaving, but not leaving anything behind for the community. And that
This was during the, which administration? 68, 69?
See, that's
Lindsay, John Lindsay.
Probably John Lindsay, yeah.
He was elected in 68.
I think that's true, yeah.
Which also happened to be the year that Kevin White was elected here.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the following year, I was able to get, this was during Vietnam War. I applied to be a conscientious objector. Surprisingly enough, I got it because it wasn't on religious grounds, but just on moral principles. And I had to find a place outside of a 50-mile radius of New York to do my service. And I had friends in up and down the East Coast, Armenian communities between Washington, D.C. and Boston. And I figured I'll sort of check with my friends, see what opportunities there were. I happened to be traveling through Boston to visit a friend in Vermont. And his sister told me that the Boston Archdiocese was looking for a community organizer in East Boston, because there was a plan to do some community development in East Boston. He needed an organizer. So I was hired initially as a volunteer, and then eventually got paid $25 a week out of petty cash at the plan, what became the Planning Office for Urban Affairs, which continues to this day doing a lot of affordable housing throughout the greater Boston area. And I started working in East Boston as a community organizer and was part of a team that helped develop, start the East Boston Community Development Corporation, which is still going on. So that's how I ended up in Boston. My plan was to go back to New York and finish architecture school. I fell in love with Boston. I didn't want to go back to New York. I tried to finish architecture school by commuting from Boston to New York. About halfway through the spring term, I decided I wasn't going to be an architect, and I dropped out of architecture school and continued to focus on community organizing. Some friends and I started doing some rehab of abandoned buildings in East Boston. figuring that with my architectural experience, I could at least rehab some houses. In fact, my wife and I live in the first house we rehabbed in East Boston, and I'm still here. The other three buildings that we rehabbed, which we have continued to rent out at the below market rents, are still going well. And my son and his wife live in one of the buildings. And that experience, I guess, qualified me to be hired at the Urban Edge in Jamaica Plain as a construction manager for their rehab, you know, home ownership and rehab program in late 1977. So I stayed at Urban Edge from 1977 until 2010, eventually becoming its executive director. Urban Edge grew. We did over 1,000 units of affordable housing throughout Jamaica Plain, Roxbury, Roslindale, Mattapan, Dorchester. And when it was time for me to transition out of my leadership role at Urban Edge, because we had a great sort of a real estate development director, that it seemed to me that was the right time to transition. We went through a three-year transition plan. Crystal Cornegay became the executive director of Higher Ground. I was very proud of that transition process. Unfortunately for Urban Edge, the governor recruited Crystal away to run the Department of Housing and Community Development 3 years later. But it was sort of a great three-decade history at Urban Edge, a lot of great experience about community building. And the lesson of East Harlem was that I wanted to make sure this time around the commitment to the neighborhood continued and we delivered results, that it wasn't just something that we parachuted in and then got what we needed and didn't leave anything behind in the neighborhood. So I think I was very pleased at the progress that Urban Edge made in the JP Roxbury neighborhoods, particularly along Columbus Avenue, where between Jackson Square and Eggleston Square, where JP and Roxbury meet. That used to be a pretty rough area. And I think by focusing in that boundary between those two neighborhoods, we were able to not only knit the neighborhood together, but also develop a lot of affordable housing and community facilities. And I think that area is now thriving. In fact, there's now concern about gentrification and displacement throughout the city and including in that neighborhood. But what I'm pleased about is that because of all the affordable housing that Urban Edge and JPNDC and others did, at least the percentage of affordable housing stock in that neighborhood is much higher than most of the city. So at least in terms of a balance of income groups, that neighborhood, I think, is home to a diverse population, both in terms of race and income.
Wow. That's quite a story, Mosaic. And of course, I knew a lot of it, but I didn't know all of it. So you were at Columbia in 68 when they occupied the president's office.
Yes, but I wasn't one of the president's office occupiers, but I was one of the people in the architecture school that occupied it for about a week.
So you're in Boston. You get to Boston, lucky for us. And in 2010, you leave Urban Edge. Now, how did you get to Higher Ground?
So Hubie Jones, who founded Higher Ground, and I had served on the board of the Boston Housing Partnership for a number of years. And in fact, before that, I used to watch Hubie on television. There was a program called 5 on 5, and he was my favorite commentator, sort of on the left, on the progressive side. And I believe, I think his name was Avi Davis, if I'm remembering this correctly, who was sort of the conservative voice, and the two of them would go at it.
That's right.
So I used to watch that. And then when I met him on the Boston Housing Partnership board, I was really impressed that he, you know, somebody that I used to watch on television and hang on every word of his, we were now serving on a board together. So we got to be good friends and colleagues. And I invited him to facilitate some strategic planning session at Urban Edge. And when it was time for me to leave Urban Edge, he agreed to MC a roast and a toast that Urban Edge sponsored, where I was roasted and Crystal was toasted, and he was a great MC for that. And then in that time period, as I was leaving Urban Edge, I had been attending some meetings that Hubie had been convening at City Year, trying to see if we could do something to improve the outcome for children and families in Boston's neighborhoods, because he was concerned that despite all the resources, the outcomes for Black and brown people, Latinx people in Boston was not getting any better after decades of effort. So there was a series of meetings that he hosted where it eventually led to the idea of creating a new organization that would be a kind of connector or convener, not duplicate services that exist. You know, there was a phrase, Boston is resource rich, but impact poor. So we didn't need another organization to provide services, but could we form something that was ever able to leverage the capacities of existing organizations to work together and get better results? So that's how Higher Ground was founded. And then as I was leaving Urban Edge, he said, would you come and help me set up this new organization? And I was hired in 2011. I did some volunteer work before I left Urban Edge. But then in 2011, when I left Urban Edge, I was hired as an interim executive director, you know, figuring that in a couple of years, I will, I was old enough to maybe retire and transition to somebody who would lead the organization long term. And that the interim period has become an 11-year tenure. And now we're in the process of planning transition to the next leader of the organization, both on a staff and a board level. But that's how I ended up at the Higher Ground. And again, consistent with the lesson I learned in East Harlem and at Urban Edge, Hubie went around. We figured that the place to start would be with the local schools. Let's see what they're trying to do and how we can help. Because there was a lot of concern that the meetings that Hubie hosted surfaced the fact that the schools were not doing a good enough job educating the kids, were not getting better results. And we didn't want to continue to watch another generation, the school system fail another generation. So he and I went around and talked to school principals in our initial target area and asked, what are you trying to do and how could we help? And one of the first things we heard was there was a growing challenge of homelessness in Boston schools. Homeless students not only were a challenge for themselves in terms of education, but because the teachers and the principals had to focus on the trauma related to homelessness, it affected the educational outcome for all the kids in that school, in their classes.
Moshe, this target area is what? Where?
So when Higher Ground was started, Hubie had Professor James Jennings, who at the time was at Tufts University, do an analysis of the neighborhoods of Boston. And the report that was, I think, done in February of 2009, based on the data available, Professor Jennings came up with sort of a neighborhood stress index. He mapped out the neighborhoods along the Blue Hill corridor and identified that corridor as the area where there was the highest need. So the long-term vision for Higher Ground was to focus on the Dudley to Mattapan Square neighborhoods along the Blue Hill corridor. But we decided to start at the Dudley end of the corridor, in part because the Association of Residents at Warren Gardens invited us to start there. And we teamed up with another organization, Center for Teen Empowerment. And we've been sharing offices on Warren Street and MLK Boulevard for the last decade or so. We used to be in the South End. Stanley Pollack, the founder of that organization, was part of the meetings that UB hosted. Most of their activities were now in Roxbury and Dorchester, so they agreed to relocate. And that's how we ended up sharing offices and kind of back office functions together at our current office. And we've been focused in that neighborhood now for most of the, while we do serve schools that are outside of our initial target area and families that are outside the target area, I think most of our focus is in Higginson Lewis, Higginson Elementary, David Ellis, the three schools that are in that immediate target area, and the Crispus Attucks Children's Center that is not far away. We also have the Trotter School that's part of our homelessness initiative along with the schools that I mentioned. So that's how we ended up in that target area. The other thing that the principal told us was an issue is the need for greater capacity in terms of our early childhood development, which is how we ended up connecting with the Crispus Attucks Children's Center, which at the time was at risk of shutting down. It had gone through a difficult transition of leadership from its longtime founding executive director. they were in a facility that physically needed work and was, you know, the heating system would fail, the windows were 50 years old. It was also the period where Boston was expanding its reach into the four-year-old pre-K level of education. So early in the Menino administration, there was an effort to reach to a younger age and get kids prepared earlier. A number of childcare centers that relied on the four-year-olds as part of their student cohort or the families they served, some of those kids now went to Boston Public Schools, and a number of childcare centers were at risk, or some of them actually shut down because they just didn't have enough kids. And Crispus Attucks was similarly at risk, under-enrolled by about 50 or so students, operating at a deficit. And, you know, there was a concern that they might shut down as well. So by agreeing to work together, initially, we thought we were going to help them with a merger with another childcare provider, but it became pretty clear soon that with some effort, they could continue to be independent. And we've been working with them for the last 5 or 6 years. We helped them with a major capital project, about a $4 million project to improve their facilities, that we were helping them with fundraising. They are now, before the pandemic, they were essentially fully enrolled. The pandemic obviously has temporarily, at least, reduced enrollment. We helped them get a universal pre-K contract with BPS. So they're one of the community sites for the pre-K program that starts at age 3. And they're thriving and they're doing well with some difficulty, of course, through the pandemic. But I think they're surviving and coming out whole on the other end. So that's how we sort of, and for the last, I'd say most of the last 10 years, we've been focused on homelessness and early childhood development. About 5 years ago, we started the planning process with a number of partners about what to do about homelessness in Boston schools, teamed up with three other nonprofits, Project Hope, Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative, and a program called New Lease for Homeless Families, EPS, Boston Housing Authority, Department of Neighborhood Development, and at the time, the education cabinet that the city had when Ron Dorsey was heading it. And Anissa Asabi George at the time was the chair of the City Council Committees on Education and Homelessness. So those were the 9 initial partners of an initiative that launched in 2018 with 7 schools, including the 4 that I mentioned before and 3 that Project Hope and DSNI were working with: Dudley Street Neighborhood Charter School, Dearborn, and Orchard Gardens. And we said, well, let's see if we can do something about the homelessness in these 7 schools as a pilot. At the time, BPS estimated that there were 243 homeless kids in those 7 schools. So we set a goal of housing those 243 kids and their families within 3 years. We were able to secure the funding for a 3-year pilot. At the end of, fast forward to 2021, by July, we had housed about 300 children, formerly homeless children and their families, but the number of homeless children had grown by then, and we still have another 50 to house in those 7 schools. So while we exceeded our original goal, homelessness continued to be an issue in Boston, even before the pandemic, just because of the market and the lack of enough affordable housing at the income levels that people need. And, you know, both BPS and the Boston Teachers Union have been impressed enough about our program. Some of the funders have been pleased about our progress and are committing to continue to funding us. So we're now in the process of scaling up to 20 schools. So we're invited 13 more schools to participate in the initiative. Between them, the 20 schools have about 500 homeless kids. And we're hoping that within the next 3 years, we'll be able to house them as well and begin laying the foundation for a citywide initiative, because there's between 4,000 and 5,000 homeless kids in the entire Boston school district. So the goal is to scale up and house the families of all the homeless kids in Boston and enable the school system not to divert their energies and attention to homelessness, but actually focus on education. The city of Lawrence has expressed interest in launching something like this in Lawrence. So we're collaborating with Lawrence Community Works as kind of the lead in that effort, and provide them with whatever information and experience we can share with them. We've approached the folks in Worcester. Worcester, my understanding is, got the highest per capita homeless students in the state, sixth highest in the country. Eventually, if we're going to solve student homelessness in Boston, it's a statewide and a national problem. It's not just a Boston problem. So we're hoping that our experience in the Roxbury-Dorchester neighborhood will set the stage for us to gradually scale up to Boston and Massachusetts, and eventually possibly the model can be replicated in other cities.
Let's focus on the Surround Care Coalition.
Yeah.
When does that take shape?
One of the things that we came across, obviously, with families that we're dealing with that were formerly homeless, is just the health and mental health being issues, obviously, when you don't know where you're going to sleep, where you can do your homework. You know, we did it's not just finding a place for families to live. It's also, what else do they need to continue to be have stable housing? The BHA has been a great partner in providing both housing units and 12 vouchers. The New Lease for Homeless Families has been a great resource, where they're it's an organization made up of affordable housing developers across the state. So they commit every third or fourth vacancy for families that we and other service providers refer to them. So once the families are housed, then the question is, how do you support them? What are the needs? What are the service needs do they have? So part of the stabilization process for a year or more after they're housed is just making sure they have all the services they need, all the access that they need. So Boston Children's Hospital was one of the major funders of our homelessness initiative. About, I guess, 2019, they launched an initiative focused on children's health equity, concerned that not all children and families in Boston have equal access to health services, both physical and mental health. And it seemed like a natural thing for us to explore, building on our experience with the schools, to use the schools as a lever or a connection to the families, and see what we could do in collaboration with the schools to improve health and mental health of the children and families that the schools serve. The schools that were already in our homelessness initiative, and Chris Posadas collectively serve over 1,000 kids or 1,200 kids and their families. So given the history that we had and the relationship that we had, it seemed like it was a natural thing to explore an initiative where we and some of the partners we've worked with over the years would provide enrichment services, not just to homeless families, but also to all the families and students in those schools. So we approached, I should back up again and just say, as I mentioned earlier, the initial vision and continuing vision of Higher Ground is not to duplicate services that exist, but basically connect services to each other and the families they're trying to serve. So we've worked with Families First, Smart from the Start, America's Promise Alliance, a domestic violence program that was out of the Brigham and Women's Hospital, Nurturey, Teen Empowerment, obviously, with whom we share offices. So when this opportunity came along, we approached the partners we've worked with before, and a number of them said, yes, we're interested in joining forces in this coalition. You know, we started putting together a planning, you know, so Children's Hospital had a planning grant that they gave to coalitions who applied. Six coalitions were selected for a planning grant. Ours was one of them. In the process of applying for the planning grant, a number of other organizations that were interested asked to join our coalition, and that's how the Surround Care Coalition came about. As you know, we developed the plan together over 2019-2020. The planning period was extended by 3 months because of the pandemic, and we submitted an implementation proposal for the plan we had developed together with the nonprofits and the schools and BPS. And fortunately, ours was one of the four coalitions selected for a three-year $1 million implementation grants. And we're now in the first year of that implementation process. And JFY Network is obviously one of the partners in that effort. One of the key things about the Surround Care Coalition is that I think an important concept is that all of these nonprofit partners are agreeing to aggregate the services they're already going to provide and focus them in the set of schools that are partners with us in this coalition. So by doing that, the 14 nonprofit partners were able to essentially commit over the next 3 years, $2 million of essentially their own resources, because these are things they were going to do and pay for. It's just that they're going to focus on these set of schools in Roxbury and Dorchester. And that commitment of $2 million of resource became a key part of our proposal, that we were essentially planning a three-year, $4.5 million implementation plan, which allowed us to do a much more robust program with the $1 million from Children's Hospital. We are collectively raising the other $1.5 million that we will need over the next 3 years. And we've made good progress in meeting our targets for the first year from a variety of sources. And we're encouraged that we will be able to do that for the 3 years. Our goal is to make the three schools and Crispus Attucks Children's Center an excellent local educational network that has, you know, where we reduce homelessness to zero, hopefully, where families have access to health and mental health services. And it becomes just like we helped the Crispus Attucks Children's Center increase their enrollment by working together, investing in the facilities, making clear that this center has a future. People could come there and know that it'll be meeting their needs. We think that the same thing can happen on a larger scale with this network of schools. They will become schools of choice instead of the default schools for people to go to, because the enrichment programs, the physical improvements, the support that they're getting from all the partners improve educational outcomes to the level where everybody in the neighborhood will want to have their kids enrolled in that school, in these schools. We think we're on track to do that over the next 3 years. We believe that in both the Homelessness Initiative and the Surround Care Coalition, aside from the services we're trying to provide, what we're trying to do consistent with Higher Ground's original mission and Hubie's vision is essentially to change the system so that it is really delivering for the families by various parts of the system working together. Because quite often, this, you know, 10 or 15 organizations are trying to provide services to the same family, but it's 15 doors that that family has to go through to get every service. But if those services can be coordinated and that family can have access to all those services from one location, in this case, the schools, it's efficient for the delivery system and it's more beneficial to the families. And I think between those two initiatives, what we hope to demonstrate is that there can be a more collaborative and collective effort that will deliver more benefits to the people for whom it's intended, and the system itself can be much more efficient and much more effective.
So this kind of work, most coalition building and all these associations, this all must take an awful lot of meetings and talking and negotiation. Do you find it easy to get this kind of cooperation happening when you suggest something to an organization or to an institution? Do they just say, hey, that's a great idea. Sure, we'll do it. And you've been doing this for quite a few years. In fact, quite a few decades. Do you find it an easy or a difficult way of doing business?
So fortunately, I've had good training at the Urban Edge. I mean, you don't do affordable housing development alone. Every CDC practitioner will tell you that to do a major affordable housing project, you may have 10 or 15 partners, both in terms of community level partners, political support partners, funders, donors, lenders, investors. So in the 33 years that I was at Urban Edge, it became second nature to do things with others because nothing happened alone. So for me, it was not a difficult transition. Once I got to Higher Ground and started learning more about schools, I realized that with all of its challenges, affordable housing community development was relatively well organized compared to education. And I think one of the things that I think makes Boston one of the more successful cities in terms of affordable housing and community development, and I know we still have a lot to do and a lot more families to serve, but it's Boston and Massachusetts are leaders in the affordable housing world in the city, in the country, is that we have a distributed system of delivering affordable housing in Boston. We have 25 community development corporations throughout the city. You have private for-profit developers that are doing affordable housing throughout the city. We don't just rely on the Boston Housing Authority to deliver affordable housing for the entire city. The CDCs and the private developers collaborate with BHA, collaborate with the BPDA, collaborate with the DND, but there's a distributed system of delivering. We do education, in my opinion, as if we let the entire affordable housing responsibility rest at BHA. And to the extent that we can bring that experience, that I can bring that experience from the CDC world to the education world, there might be an opportunity to help somewhat decentralize the educational delivery system, like we're doing at Higher Ground with the Surround Care Coalition and with the family-led stability pilot on homelessness, to the extent that there could be networks of partners surrounding a set of schools in a neighborhood and make it their business for that, for those schools to be successful, we might do a better job of delivering education in Boston.
So this has been going on. This has been going on now for how long? Is it 3 years now? The Surround Care Coalition.
We're in the first full year of implementation.
But the planning
following a 15-month planning process.
A 15-month. But actually, weren't you really working on this even before that?
Yeah, no.
When did we meet? Remember, we had that meeting a number of years ago.
Well, I think if you're referring to the meetings before Higher Ground was started or after?
No, after Higher Ground.
When
you and I got together at the Parker House and you roped me into this, wasn't it? That's more than just.
So I think what you're referring to, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago.
That sounds more like it, yeah.
There was an opportunity to apply for a Promised Neighborhood grant from the U.S. Department of Education.
Mm.
And we teamed up with a number of nonprofits, including ABCD, including BPS. And ABCD agreed to be the lead in applying for a Promised Neighborhood grant. We did that 2 years in a row. We didn't get it. But I think that experience was the beginning of thinking that there might be a way for us to collaborate, to do things collectively beyond just the homelessness. And I think that's what you're referring to.
You are really sold on the idea of collective action, right?
Yes.
Do you think that's the social model that is going to move this country forward?
I guess I want to stop short of saying this is the formula that will solve all problems. I do think that, again, with the community development experience I brought to Higher Ground and what we have seen, I am sure that we would not have been able to house the families of 300 homeless children had we tried to do it alone. So it is clear to me that by working together, a coalition of now 7 organizations in one case and 20 partners in another case, including schools, can more effectively deliver more services and more benefits to the families we're trying to reach. But to answer your question about, is this difficult? Relative to the outcome, I don't think it's difficult. Yes, it requires more meetings. Yes, it requires more negotiation. But what has been inspiring with the Surround Care experience is that we can actually see the teamwork across the 20 partner organizations, including the schools and BPS, that is delivering. You can visualize like an overlay organization or an overlay network of people working together, even though they're all on different payrolls. And some of the, there's no way any one of us could have gotten the $1 million grant from Children's Hospital to implement this plan. There's no way any one of us could have brought $4.5 million of value to those 1,200 children and their families if we were not working together. So yes, it takes more effort, but it's effort well worth it given the results that you get that's far beyond what we could do alone.
Well, of course, you have to ask the question, is there an alternative? I don't know that we have seen an alternative, but the degree of collaboration that is occurring now in the Surround Care Coalition, I'm not part of the larger homeless initiative, but what we were talking about the other day, the degree of cooperation among the members of the Surround Care Coalition, that seems to be a whole lot of progress, does it not?
Definitely. And that's why I'm very encouraged and inspired, because, you know, nonprofits have this the rap that we're always competing for resources. We don't collaborate. We work in silos. What I've seen in the 11 years at Higher Ground is the exact opposite, that, in fact, nonprofits and service providers are very willing to work together, very willing to share resources, not just funds that we raise collectively, but share their resources with each other.
So then, again, shifting the focus to the education system, are you seeing progress in the idea of decentralizing delivery of education in Boston?
So I'm a born optimist. So I always see the bright side, no matter how difficult things get. As you know, we have executed a MOA with BPS on the homelessness initiative for the next 3 years, along with a non-disclosure agreement that allows us to actually evaluate the impact on the students. We are negotiating an MOA for the Surround Care Coalition. I expect will be executed soon. It also commits BPS and the schools and us to work together with the coalition for the next 3 years to implement what's in the Surround Care plan as it evolves over time. So I do think, and then the Surround Care Coalition is one of at least two, if not more, coalitions that have formed focused on schools. There's the Grove Hall Alliance, which is also has been going on for a number of years. So I think these are two early models of what potentially could be a distributed education delivery system. I'm also encouraged by the level of support we have gotten from both the current and former Boston school superintendents, you know, three or four of the recent superintendents during our 11 years, and also the Boston Teachers Union. They have seen, and we've, you know, part of what we do is make sure we brief everybody up and down the structure, you know, from the mayor's office, superintendent, teachers union, principals, parents, parent leaders, teachers. The Surround Care Coalition, for example, has a parent-teacher advisory group that meets monthly, that reviews what we're doing and suggests the alternative way approaches. So, you know, the teachers union, for example, has made reference to our homelessness initiative in their contract negotiations. They want to see this as a major investment across the city. I get calls from teachers in schools all over the city saying, or parents saying, when can we participate in the homelessness initiative? So I think there is a interest throughout the system. And the question is, how do you go from the current structure to one that builds on the strengths of the current structure, but also captures the strengths of the network of service delivery organizations across the city? So I'm optimistic that if we can demonstrate the success through the Surround Care Coalition, and similarly, if the Grove Hall Alliance can demonstrate success in terms of improved outcomes, then this may be the way things evolve in the city and possibly are deployed in other places.
Why not merge Grove Hall and Surround Care? And you said there's a third one someplace in town.
Well, of the four coalitions that Children's Hospital funded, a number of them are working with schools. So yeah. How many of them are totally school-based, I can't say for sure. But I think the reason, you know, just like the 25 CDCs across Boston, while they might collaborate on certain initiatives, they are focused in a particular neighborhood.
Yeah.
And because of that focus, that neighborhood then thrives in terms of affordable housing and community development. I think having networks of enrichment programs and service delivery organizations adopting or working with a set of schools in a particular neighborhood has a value. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean we don't talk to the Grow High Alliance or vice versa, but I think it's important for there to be, if everybody merged, you'd be back to having a centralized system. So if you have neighborhood focused networks of service providers surrounding the schools that they care about, they can achieve things on a by focusing in that neighborhood that otherwise is much more difficult to achieve.
So, Mosik, this does sound like somewhat of a new vision of social organization, neighborhood-based networks focusing on a particular issue, homelessness, education, healthcare, whatever it is. But it's, you know, if you think of it as an overlay on top of other maps, there would be a coalition here and a coalition there and a coalition here. And you would have maybe, you know, maybe in Boston, just on the education side of it, maybe you would end up with six or eight neighborhood coalitions.
You know, it may seem like a new idea, but those of us who were around and are old enough remember the Healthy Boston Initiative, which was a similar idea promoted by the city and the public health department.
It's come around in model cities, even. I mean, all the way back. So maximum feasible participation. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So I don't know that the idea is a new one, but I think in our case, the notion of coordinating housing, health, and education, and maybe workforce development, we will need to add.
Yeah.
By bringing together willing partners that are willing to work together and collectively set some goals that they share and commit to implement them in a defined period of time, I think it's the latest iteration of an idea that's been around for a while. I don't think it's necessarily that new. CDCs have had about, you know, 50, 60 years to evolve to where they are now and the effectiveness that they have.
I mean, how long?
Well, the first CDC that was started was in Bedford-Stuyvesant when Robert Kennedy was senator. So the CDC and the CDC movement has its roots in the union movement in the 30s and 40s. So these things sort of evolved over time. You know, so I'd say the nationwide, the CDC movement is pretty established in a recognized model. And, you know, maybe over time, the same thing can happen in not just education, but the, you know, kind of health, education, housing, workforce development as an array of things that every family needs in order to thrive. And are there ways that the system, the delivery system, can accomplish that? And I think Boston is a small enough big city or a big enough small city where it's perhaps more possible to implement a model like that here, and then be replicated in other cities. So I think we have an opportunity to make a difference, not just locally, but possibly nationwide.
So right now, the Surround Care Coalition is, what is it, $4 million altogether?
It's a three-year, $4.5 million plan, yes.
How do we get it to $40 million?
I think the way we get it to $40 million is to make this the delivery system. You know, keep in mind, part of the argument we made to secure the funds for Surround Care Coalition is that, and this goes back to the Promised Neighborhood effort that we did not get the federal grant. We're basically saying to each other, we're going to spend X millions of dollars in the next 5 years anyway, individually. So might we get better results if we aggregate those resources by collaborating together and focus in a particular place and then seek the additional resources we need to implement and accomplish more than we might have if we continue to work in silos. And I think in that sense, we turned what the nonprofit partners were going to do anyway over the next 3 years. We more than doubled the resource. If we are successful, as I think we will be in the next 3 years, then, you know, basically we'll see what happened with the same thing that happened in the homelessness initiative. We started with 7 schools and less than a $2 million budget over the 3 years. We are now scaling up to 20 schools with a $2.5 million budget over the next 3 years. And we're likely to then scale up to the entire city with a $15 or $20 million budget over the next 5 to 7 years. And each step is based on the success of the previous pilot phase or the previous phase. So I think
where will that money come from?
Again, that money will come from the sources that are investing that money anyway. When we were talking with one of the funding sources that supported what we're doing, what is New Commonwealth Fund. And when we were being interviewed by that by the board of the fund, and we mentioned that we're scaling up from 7 to 20 schools, one of the board members said, why are you just scaling up from 7 to 20 schools? Why not to the entire system? And I said, well, we can do that, but that requires that you and all the other funders make a major multi-year commitment to this effort. And we also need to advocate together for the rental vouchers that is necessary for us to be able to access affordable housing in Boston. And that's going to be the next thing we take on. I mean, these philanthropic sources and corporations need to make these investments anyway, in order to keep workers in the city, in order to meet the needs of the workforce, in order to make sure the kids are educated so that in the future they'll have the employees that they want, or they can have the service delivery that they want. It benefits the funders as well. It benefits the corporations. This is not just they give and we take. This, they become partners. Liberty Mutual Foundation, who's been a consistent funder of ours in the homelessness initiative, has committed to continue to investing in the initiative as we scale up. They're not doing that just as a charity. They're doing it because they believe, in fact, Melissa McDonnell, the head of the foundation, attends most of our meetings. They're a partner at the table with us. And I think the same thing can happen with the Saran Care Coalition, where Children's Hospital and the other sources that we're accessing, they're our partners, not just funders. And we are collectively working together to accomplish a shared mission, which is children's health and equity in the case of the Saran Care Coalition. Mm-hmm. Or housing in the case of the other, and educational outcomes across both coalitions. So I approach this as we're all partners in this. We're not grantor and grantee.
Well, Mosek, if anybody can use the word partners with credibility, it is you. I think we've covered a lot of ground and gotten a very clear sense of the vision, not just for the Surround Care Coalition, but the vision for the collaborative model as a way of delivering essential services in all these areas to residents of a city like Boston. You've certainly been at it as long as anybody else I know, and you're still smiling.
Well, before we close, let me just say one thing that I know, Gary, you've heard from me before. I'm finishing a book, the first sentence of which is something, I'm paraphrasing, something like, every society throughout history has had to justify inequity. And if they fail to justify inequity, the whole political and social structure would be at risk of collapse. When I read that sentence, I realized that inequity is something that's really, for thousands of years, have been baked into all systems that we are part of. And so it's almost like gravity. We've accepted it as a condition that we have to deal with. And every society, including this one, has this justification. People pull themselves up by the bootstraps, or people work hard, that's why they're successful. And we seem to overlook the systemic inequities that make it difficult for some people and not others. There's a huge disparity in the investment in children's education, depending on whether that child is born in Roxbury or Winchester. It's not just the public dollars, it's also the private dollars that flow because that family has the resources to do summer camps or after-school programs or trips to other places. So part of what I think what the Surround Care Coalition is trying to do is, within this system where the gravity is pretty powerful, the gravity that's inequity is pretty powerful, and it's very hard to move. It's not like you can just fly off the earth and say, I'm overcoming gravity. So you've got to figure out how to mitigate the inequities and how you can push the system to be more responsive to the needs of those who don't have the, you know, I would guess that investment in the better resourced communities is 3 or 4 times compared to a child's an investment in a child's education in Roxbury or Dorchester or Mattapan.
Oh, more than that. You remember that number that popped up several months ago? What was it? Net worth, family net worth in...
$200,000 versus $8. Yeah.
Yes, that one. That one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I think
More than 3 or 4 times. It's.
Well, no, I'm just talking about the investment in education.
Yeah.
So at Boston, basically, Boston is people complain that Boston is investing $20,000+ per student.
Right.
And why is that not enough when other communities are less? Well, other communities might be less, but the families investing $30,000 or $40,000 a year in that child's education through their private means.
Right.
So I don't know what the number is, but it is multiple times. And so what we're trying to do through the Surround Care Coalition is to mitigate that by making sure that every child has access to whatever they need.
Yeah.
And while we may not be able to escape the gravity of inequities in the system, we should be able to figure out a way for there to be more equity in the investment of education of all children. And I think the other thing that we're trying to establish is, by bringing the parents' voices into the dialogue, into the decision-making, it's not just like funders are partners, not just the people who fund us. Parents are not just the recipients of the service. They are the drivers of the change that we're trying to promote.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And we've seen that happen in our experience already. When parents' voices are raised, things happen. And I think that's the other systemic change we're trying to make, is for parents in these schools to recognize the power that is inherent and raise their voices and exercise that power. So I'm very optimistic that on all fronts we'll be successful, multiple layers of the system change that we're pursuing.
Mosek, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a really enlightening conversation. I would like to hold out the possibility of continuing this at another time. I think there's plenty more to talk about, but I think we've covered a lot of ground, and you have really given us a lot to think about and actually a lot to be proud of. You know, your achievements over all these years that you've been toiling in the vineyards here are well, you can see them. Walk down Columbus Avenue and you can see them. And
well,
now,
you and JFY have been a great partner, so I look forward to continuing to work with you and JFY. Together we can accomplish anything.
We would like to thank Mosek Hacobian and Gary Kaplan for joining us on this month's podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please navigate to our website, jfynet.org, which also features a wealth of commentary, dialogue, and free scholastic resources, including this monthly podcast, to support all educational communities. Thank you for joining us. For JFY Networks, I'm Greg Cunningham.